everybody. Welcome to the UGA Sports Live Podcast. My name is Roddy DeBolsi. I'm joined by Jake Roos, the recruiting superstar at UGASports.com, and, of course, former Georgia Bulldogs head coach Jim Donnan, Hall of Famer, one of the best to have ever done it. So we got Jim Donnan, Jake Roos, and myself, and, of course, we have you. I want to give a big shout-out to our sponsors, Athens Ford, Aaron Overhead Doors, Your Pie, Academia Brewing Company, Cable East, and Georgia Game Day Center. And, of course, we're here at Champions on Baxter Street. They brought out the sausage, cheese, and pickle plates.
We got about halfway through before the show began.
We had a little technical issue, and as that technical issue was being resolved, that plate halfway disappeared. So it's not pretty, but it is delicious.
I mean, it's what you call a pregame warm-up.
Exactly. The focus of today's show, we're going to talk about the South Carolina loss, any recruiting updates we have.
Are we moving on to Kentucky?
Not yet. We're not moving on as much as Kirby is.
Yeah.
We do want to talk about Kentucky as well, but I think the best thing we can do, Coach, the best thing for our viewers and listeners would be to answer as many questions as possible.
Sure.
Because people have questions.
Yeah, let's get those questions instead of, you know, they don't want to hear my opinion about everything. I mean, I'll give you my opinion based on what eerily similar to my last year when we played South Carolina and Quincy had five picks. That was eerily similar.
Right, yeah. Well,
I'm surprised nobody's even written about that, but it was a highly ranked team playing against a team that, you know, won their first game but had lost a lot the last year. And we just turned it over, and, you know, when that happens, it's hard to win. The other thing that I don't think I've ever seen before, which could be maybe Dave McMahon could look. I don't think I've ever seen a team win a game without ever getting in the red zone. Their team never hit the red zone
That is pretty wild.
They hit a 48-yard touchdown pass, intercepted a pass for a touchdown. Their other two scores were during overtime. So they never were in the red zone in the regulation game.
That's unbelievable.
I am curious. I would like to know how many times a team has won a game turn the ball over four times and not getting any turnovers, and the other team never got into the red zone. I got to wonder the win percentage on that is.
Yeah, I mean,
it would be pretty skewed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's give the defense credit. The defense did a pretty good job. I mean,
really did. Just one really bad play there by J.R. Reed getting the penalty on 3rd and 20. I mean, we got on University of Florida when they played Miami when they had 4th and 32 and had an interference call. I mean,
oof.
You got to know the down and distance. But, you know, J.R. had a really good game overall. So, I mean, you're going to make some mistakes. But what's the first question of the day
here? Let me ask you this one, though. Are you worried about that? We've seen two kind of double moves go for touchdowns.
Yeah, it always worries you. But, I mean, there's a situation again where Webb got hurt and Devod's in the game and they go after him and he bites on it. I mean, that's a second team player that's a freshman, and they made a good play and it ended up being a touchdown.
All right, so I don't want to beat that horse to death, but I'm just saying it's a situation where Kentucky can Kentucky do that this weekend? They got a really weird situation at quarterback.
Yeah, I think they present a very interesting challenge to any team in the fact that they did this a couple years ago when they had some quarterback issues and they moved the kid to Wildcat. And I don't know that they've done it more than once there, but they did it before, before – Coach Stoops was there. They had a kid do it and was pretty successful with it. And then, you know, they did some Wildcat with Benny Snell all the time last year, but it was more just runs up the middle. But this guy Bowden is a wide receiver that I don't know. Does he have any quarterback background in high school? Or?
Not that I'm aware of, but let me go check.
But he had 190 yards rushing in himself. But, hey, but let's temper that a little bit. But they're going against – Arkansas. I mean, Arkansas and Vanderbilt.
That's fair.
I think Arkansas and Vanderbilt should play the same day they play the SEC championship game and play the toilet bowl at Vanderbilt Stadium and see how many they can draw for that. I mean, those are two terrible teams.
Yeah, and I guess sometimes we think of, you know, well, they're an SEC team, but I don't think we realize how bad those two are right now.
No, I mean, Arkansas, how many straight they lost now, Dave, in the conference? They're in double digits.
I saw this yesterday, and I really couldn't believe it, but it was a question somebody posted. Actually, it was our publisher, for the Arkansas site over there, she said, you know, there's like some undercurrent talk of maybe them wanting to move out of the conference.
Be a good move.
Go over to the ACC. There ain't a whole lot going on over that way.
Yeah, I mean, here's something, and we got to get these questions. This is going to be an interesting paradox. They're looming at looking at a W against Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky beat Army last week, held them to 8 points. One of their losses in an opening day loss was to Central Arkansas. So if all of a sudden Western Kentucky beats Arkansas and Central Arkansas beats Western Kentucky, then you're going to have University of Arkansas as the third best team in the state of Arkansas behind Arkansas State and Central Arkansas, which, I mean, come on, man. I mean, their budget's not as much as, you know, the whole – I mean
– what Arkansas uses in one game. I will say I've covered a game in that Arkansas Stadium. That place is loud.
It is.
And it's a tough place to coach a game. But
they don't have any players. At this point. I mean, they got – you know, look what's happened at SMU since he left. I mean, they're ranked in the top and hadn't lost a game.
Well, and you're starting to see now, you know, a lot of people, I think, were concerned about the recruiting effects of something like Saturday on Georgia. That loss to South Carolina – look, you're going to give up once in a while. I mean, that's going to happen. Recruits understand that. What's tough is when you look like you're moving completely in the wrong direction, and that's what Arkansas
is. Yeah, they had a kid decommit from Texas.
Keith Crawford, a very, very good offensive lineman, a guy they could definitely have used.
But, you know, when you think back, they got rid of Houston Nutt because he was only winning 7, 8, 9 games a year, and they haven't done much. They won the 1 year with Petrino pretty big, but – Bielema never got it going, and now – so that's a good stat here from our Dave.
Oh, okay. So Lynn Bowden did play some quarterback. He threw for 1,300 yards in high school, ran for 2,200 yards out of Ohio, Warren Harding High School in Ohio. Arkansas, last SEC win, Ole Miss 2017, 14 straight SEC losses.
And you know who was happy with that one? Alabama, because it got Alabama.
Oh, that's right.
Ole Miss could have won the championship that year, wouldn't it?
I forgot all about that. Speaking of SEC championships and such and so forth, where does Georgia stand now after having an SEC East loss? A lot of people are acting like it's the end of the road. All bets are off.
Well, the one thing that helps you as far as the SEC East, but you know, not the national picture, is I don't think Missouri is going to be eligible. So it's going to be between us and Florida, and South Carolina's already got 2 losses, and you got to figure they're going to get 3 or 4. So head-to-head with Florida is going to be huge. I mean, if we would beat them head-to-head and lose to Auburn, we could still be in the SEC championship game.
All right, let's
go. I wasn't that impressed with Florida's defense. I mean, when a team runs – do you realize that they ran 44 plays and scored 42 times? 42 points.
That would have been amazing.
And they had
the efficiency. They had 40, the chart.
They had 42 points.
Yeah.
But in the staff meeting on Sunday morning, Coach O said, "What happened on those other 2 play series? We didn't score those other 2. 44. Seriously, man, they had like 8 yards a play. And I've never seen – I mean, I've seen Grantham be perplexed before, but he looked like – he really looked like he was in bad shape over there. That was embarrassing.
Are you ready for some questions?
Ready.
Let's do it.
Well, we hope he's embarrassed in 2 weeks. Are you done eating sausage?
Brent Tucker wants to know.
About Brent Tucker, did you notice his little girls playing basketball on Facebook?
I did not.
Yeah, I was impressed with that.
Very nice, very nice.
I wonder if he's a coach.
Brent wants to know, he says, Coach, I think this is a question a lot of people have moving forward. He says, what worries you most about the team moving forward?
You know, there's always that what if deal. Like, all of a sudden you think, well, you know, we can't reach our goals. I don't think that can happen with Kirby as a coach. I really think that kids understand that there's still a lot out there. But, you know, anytime that you have a little bit of adversity, sometimes you start to question yourself, question the coaches. So we just got to keep the unity there and understand that, that as long as we don't beat ourselves, we're in good shape. But, you know, we also got to realize that we're playing against some teams that scout us, that have physical players. This is the SEC. You're not going to knock everybody around like we do some of these other teams. So we got to make some bigger plays. You know, we're just not having a big enough impact causing turnovers or making explosive plays on offense.
I think that's Kirby Smart's concern. He's pretty much said that week in and week out. So the question then becomes, how do they take those steps forward? What is it that breaks open explosive plays? How do you find the ability to create pressure at this point?
Get some missed tackles by the other team once in a while, too.
True.
Kirby was talking about the explosive plays, and I want to temper that question. It seems like a lot of people boil it down to get the more explosive plays, get the turnovers. People either want to blame the coach or blame a player. Where do you look first? Is it a play call or is it execution?
You always, there's plenty of blame to be placed on everybody. Fair. I mean, every play you call has a chance to do some things good. I mean, you can't call a perfect game and you can't call a terrible game. It just depends on the execution by the players. And the one thing that we've tried to stress on this show, and part of the reason I'm on it, is, you know, technique and knowledge of assignment are so important. But you can have a great technique and you still can't block that Kinlaw kid. I mean, he's going to make.
Yes.
And our offense is based on zone blocking, and if we don't get movement, we have a hard time, because these guys, what they're doing now, and you saw Notre Dame do it a little bit. Notre Dame held us up and then ran the linebackers through. These guys held us up and let the linebackers scrape, and that Brunson kid made a lot of plays. So you gotta understand, if you got five guys up there and they got five pretty good ones, you're not going to knock them all back every play.
Well, and I think after seeing what Kinlaw was able to do, I bet Derek Brown's licking his chops.
That's right.
Going to be that very tough matchup for Georgia this season.
It is, but – you know, that's the thing about a game of college football now. There's got to be some games that you win 20-17 and all. You're just not going to run up and down the field on a good defense. I mean, they didn't run up and down. Nobody's done that on our defense. I think that's one of the things that I'm looking for from our team, looking at Alabama and LSU. I think our defense stacks up with anybody if we just keep up playing with the intensity and getting our starter back at right corner or field corner or whatever you call him is going to really help, because I think Daniels is getting some good play. But this guy, is just an unbelievable kid. He got a lot of experience last year, and I think getting him back in there will really help our defense.
I do want to give South Carolina that defensive front credit. I don't think anybody realized how good Kinlaw was. We mentioned him last week, you know, and – shout out to Brent Rollins, who, when he was our Pro Football Focus guy, that was the one matchup he called out. He's like, look, I want to see how Kinlaw works against Georgia's interior, and he did a hell of a job. But on the other side of him, you have DJ Wonnum, who's very talented, very good, and then Rick Sandage, a guy that we talked about on this show multiple times.
Georgia wanted in a big way. Yeah, absolutely.
So you get those three up there, as Coach calls them, Chilardos. You get them, and they're, like you said, they're setting up their Georgia's coming at them with that zone. They're peaking. You know, they're holding up the offensive line. They're taking on those blockers and clearing the way for the linebackers to come through. And there were a couple times where the linebackers were coming free.
Yeah.
We had guys miss and not climb. And, an unobstructed guy against Zeus. Zeus can't break two-on-one. He might break one-on-one, but not two-on-one.
The discouraging thing for me, though, was our passing game. Not getting any separation, missing some open receivers, throwing a pick that was, whether it was Lander's fault or more than likely it was, as far as breaking in instead of out. You know, those are things that can't happen in a tight game. You can't beat yourself. And give Muschamp's a brilliant defensive coach, just like our guys, and they played our tendencies. Our tendency is the outside receivers, you know, run the out route and run the deep route. They don't really break inside much. We throw over the middle to the tight end some, but not much, but to the slots. But the wide, we don't ever see the wide guys come inside a whole lot. So they played us really tight. I know I'm embarrassed the way that watch-along show, I said the first thing there when we did the preliminary, I think we were going to have a field day throwing the ball, because Alabama did. I mean, they had blinker lights on against them. But they played us a lot different than Alabama. You know, they tried to play inside Alabama, and those guys just ran around them. But
yeah, we don't have a Jerry Jeudy or a Ruggs or somebody like that over there that you're throwing to. That, I think that makes a difference when you want that separation.
Yeah, you know, you got four guys who can blow the top off.
I mean, and you have to account for each one of them. You get a lot of man situations. Yeah. You were right. If you didn't catch the watch-along, folks, if the next time they show it on TV or if you've recorded the game on your DVR, go back and watch it along with the UGA Sports Live watch-along party on YouTube. You can find it on our YouTube channel. And Coach was calling plays before they happened, calling what South Carolina was going to do before that happened.
Romo.
It was Tony Romo-esque.
Needs to work and catch up with me.
But Coach had it down. And one of the things
I don't have a Corona commercial either.
One of the things you were pointing out was there were a couple times you were calling for a slant or a post route, something to kind of break it up because they were running step for step with Georgia's receivers down the sideline. And every time Jake Fromm tried it, you know, it's into traffic. How do you
well,
see it?
Philosophically, though, there's a lot can happen on a ball over the middle. It can get tipped. You know, there's they can give you different coverage. Outside is a lot easier to read, question about it, guys. But they really dared us to throw deep, and when we did, we missed a couple overthrows. And when those are going to happen too, but you can't miss them on third down because then you're punting. But we only punted twice, and we had the four turnovers, and then we had to play at the end of regulation where the ball was just tipped up in the air. But we just got to get more efficient. You know, we're not a team that's going to – I think when you look at the sacks and the runs that Fromm had, we had 57 call passes, attempted 51. That usually means that you're not winning the game because you're trying to – so it's just – we should have hit more passes on them, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was –
Let's get some questions.
I don't want to mention the fact that a lot of people say, well, Georgia needs to split, throw the ball more. You threw it 51 times. You were moving up and down the field. I know a lot of people are, banging on James Culley, banging on the quarterbacks. I mean, almost 500 yards of offense. Four of those drives, including the one in overtime, die because of turnovers. So you're moving up and down the field. It's not like you're getting killed. There were some bad plays. There were some drops. There were some issues. But you're throwing it around. I remember it wasn't that long ago that we had, Nick Chubb and Sony Michel sitting down with Jim Chaney saying, hey.
Absolutely.
Hey, we need to run the ball more. I mean, I'm not saying that fans could ever be happy, but I'm just saying that,
Well, here's a stunning reality pill, and I'm going to say it just exactly like it is. You lost three guys that you thought might be coming back. Those three got drafted. You lost a guy that was going to be your number one receiver before the season started. He got kicked off the team. And now you've lost the guy that's been the most creditable one, Cager, out to Texas A&M. So that's five guys that, you were counting on. Obviously, three of them you knew you weren't going to have here, and you worked in the spring. But you didn't have Blaylock in the spring to work with, and Pickens either. But Pickens showed a lot Saturday, seven receptions, and he's going to come around. It's just everything's magnified when you don't score many points. And that's the one perplexing thing here. We've had three losses that – just like I had a loss to Southern Miss that'll haunt me the rest of my life. But we lost to Vanderbilt, Georgia Tech, and South Carolina at home in the last 4 years. And that just usually doesn't happen to Kirby's teams, the way they played. I mean, that was kind of hard to believe, really.
Yeah, you go back to that first year, you kind of understand it. That's why this past loss was so mind-blowing, because you just didn't expect it. One thing you can expect, though, is a good deal. If you swing by our friends out at Athens Ford, they have – the minute you go to their website, a little pop-up window comes up. Don't close the pop-up window immediately because it's a $500 off coupon on any vehicle. Get your $500 off coupon on any vehicle. You put your name, address in there, and they'll send it to you. Don't close the pop-up window at AthensFord.com. That's one you might want to keep up. And what I really like is I told you folks, when you, if you're a longtime listener to the show, you know I was hemming and hawing back between a Ford F-150 and an Explorer. I just couldn't decide which one I wanted. I went with the Explorer because I got to haul these idiots around to games and such and all our gear. And
you're not even going anymore.
Well, I might not. Our live show is good. Well, I might have to give you all the keys to it.
There you go. Now, so, I like that.
And now the F-150 has a ton of room for four people to sit in the cab, but I didn't want to – I need room for all our gear. We have camera equipment. We have cameras, all sorts of stuff like that, video stuff, you know, audio stuff. So I got the Explorer. But if you are having the same dilemma that I did and you're thinking, hey, do I want a Ford F-150? Do I want an Escape? Do I want an Explorer? I want to tell you about the 2019 Ford F-150 XLS STX Super Cab. Right now, you can get $14,184 off. Let me say that again, $14,000 plus off on the 2019 Ford F-150. It's a fantastic truck, great gas mileage. Number one selling truck in America. They have a ton of them over at Athens Ford. You just can't beat it. Plus, $500 off coupon. So when you're saving $14,500, $14,600 on a F-150, you need to swing by our friends out at Athens Ford. Remember, anything you buy from them is going to have a lifetime powertrain warranty on it. So I say you're strolling through the
F-150s. Yeah. No, that sounds like a good deal. All right, Coach, you mentioned this, and we've got a lot of people who have asked this question. How do you create more separation for your wide receivers? Is this a matter of scheme? Is this these guys getting
the one
free?
Thing you can do for outside guy is line them in and bunch and try to pick them off, you know, with the releases. You can put them in motion. You can line them up and shift them. But when they're just standing there and the guy doesn't have the threat of him doing anything but releasing, then the guy can get kind of situated there and try to out-execute you. So you got to help them sometime. You know, if you're going against – if you're having trouble getting separation, you got to put them in motion or shift them or try to pick them off. That's one good thing.
Explain the bunching on one side.
A bunch is if you just think in terms of something congested there and as far as the composition of an offensive play where you have three receivers standing pretty much a yard and a half away from each other, so the defensive backs have to do that. And so sometimes you let the inside guy wait and the first two come off to try to pick the guy off, or you do it with all three of them. But the idea is all that congestion, people are going to run into each other a little bit. So, and sometimes you can really run well on that because these guys are so worried about getting off their each other there that you can pick them off that way. So bunch is good. We used to call tray right close, trips right bunch. I mean, those are ways to help your guys release a little bit better. And then you can shift them or JoJo them or line them up in the back. Phil, I know we put Robertson in motion a lot. And sometimes you can kind of screw the defense over and get in an unbalanced line and put your flanker in motion, which you usually don't expect him to go in motion, and motion him back to the weak side. And that way he's running when the other guy's on defense, and instead of just standing still and releasing. So that's one thing.
So what route would you have him run then?
Well, it just depends on how much field you got, but you like to run the post with him, or you like to run, push him off and then run the hitch, you know, because normally when a guy's on the run, the guy's going to be backing up and you can run a hitch on him. But the major thing that we got to do, though, is run our offense effectively, is just get some big plays. I've been saying it since the first game. We are not having a lot of long runs or passes. That's just we've only thrown one touchdown this year over 10 yards, right?
Pass. I believe that is correct.
And that's not any knock, but that's we've thrown some good red zone. That was a great throw from Jake to Robertson for a touchdown there right at the end of the game when they called a penalty on Wolf, and they should have. So what else we got here?
A number of folks asking this question. Everybody is seemingly perplexed by what you saw out of the run game on Saturday. A lot of the up the middle. Dog Nation 4 over on the board, UGA Sports Vent, says, why does Georgia not run toss sweep? Is it a lack of personnel? A lot of people asking a very similar question.
That's a good question, and everybody wants to know, why don't you use a fullback? Why don't you run the toss sweep? the toss sweep is an outstanding play 20 years ago because people didn't run the myriad defenses that you run now, where you have an extra guy in the box and you're always bringing guys up to stop this point. You had a lot more conventional defenses, you know, so you knew where everybody was. But now, if you put a second guy in the game as a lead blocker, the way people can mix up their safeties and bring people off the edge, it just has a chance because it's such a show, what we call a show play. Everybody sees as soon as you toss it to the guy, they're going to come hell-bent for election to make the play. In the old days, the defenses were a lot more straight up, and, you know, it's mano-mano. Now, any kind of toss like that, they just get so much reaction by the defense that it's hard, and it's a slower developing play. You got to maintain your blocks a long time, but it's just kind of evolved out of football. You don't see many teams run. You see the little quick pitch that people do where they try to outflank the tackle some way, but toss sweep, as good as it sounds, is archaic now in football.
What about
veer?
This
what
one,
about the veer?
This one from the initial.
There's some veer. There's stuff now with the, you know, I'd like to see us pull some linemen, but that's not the way we do things, and it's not my call. But
South Carolina did it really well.
When you pull linemen, you have a tendency to keep the defense off guard because if a guy knows all of a sudden every time he's getting hooked or come off, and then he's not worried about somebody coming down on him, you know, or blocking him low. So all of our blocks are, you know, thick. That's just the way we do it.
All right. Good question here from ZS Dog 27.
The other thing is on our read plays, we don't usually read it. We just hand it off, and you know, we do call it once in a while where we'll keep it, but that would help if once in a while we'd read it and just keep it because the backside flow is really strong against us, don't y'all think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, hell, going back to last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just this year that they realized that, you know, the backside pursuit is effective, and, you know, they're putting – sometimes you're seeing their faster guy on the backside coming around the edge.
The misdirection was good against Tennessee. We didn't run any the other night.
All right, this is a good one from ZS Dog 27. Something I've noticed as well. He says, I noticed in the Notre Dame and South Carolina game that Georgia seemed like they were taking a long time to get the play in. Why is this continuing to be a problem? We ended up with that illegal shift penalty at the end of regulation because of it, that didn't leave too much time to change the play.
Well, there's times when you're going to have some of that, but it gets magnified when you don't do well. But, you know, the pressure of the situation, sometimes the guy misses the signal. Sometimes the communication from the press box to the sideline gets screwed up. But for the most part, we're pretty fluid. But they're magnified when they don't work. And there at the end of the game was just not good. The one thing you always tell your quarterback and everybody, if you don't get the play till 14 or 12 seconds left on the clock, never change it. And I think we were trying to get such a good play that we took a little while thinking, what's the safest play to maybe get 5 yards and not lose some and get a bit closer to on the kick or whatever there might be. But then we end up getting a penalty. And what happened is some routes are better with the slot receiver off the line and the wide guy on the line, and vice versa. Some of them are better with the slot receiver on the line and the other guy back. So they both shifted because they what the route was, and neither one of them were set, and that was bad.
Yeah, and Kirby said it might have been an early snap too in that situation, you know, and
happened because.
But your center's because thinking we're almost out of time.
Well, the center's always looking at the play clock too, and
that's
he's thinking. So, but the what ifs there is something you go around. Don't change the play if it's in there late. Hey, you got to go with it. That's what I would say.
Makes sense to me. Platinum Glove 13 says...
Platinum, let's go.
Yeah, he says, sure. My question, there have been multiple quotes and comments made this week about the coaches seeing that the team wasn't ready to play during pregame or inside the locker room before the game. I think Kirby Smart mentioned something like that to Chuck Dowdle ahead of the game.
What did he say?
Essentially saying, you know, we got to get ready. Or you know, he said that he was concerned in the pregame about the... I guess the mentality of the team. He mentioned something to that.
Well, you know, he's got a feel for his team. If he felt like that they didn't have all their ducks in a row, I mean, we came out and went right down the field, got three, and, you know, got them off the field. So I don't know. but I didn't hear that talking to Chuck. But
his question here says, when that happens, and then the team has a game like on Saturday, is that indicative of a larger problem inside the team in the locker room, or is it commonplace for a coach to see issues like this before a game for a team as highly regarded as Georgia was prior to Saturday?
Yeah, you got a feel for your team, but we don't have a problem in the locker room. I can tell you that. We got a little doubt right now about ourselves because maybe every team's got to get their own personality. Every team's got to earn their spurs. You know what I mean? They got to do better than what the preseason's – whatever the preseason says they're going to do, because you got to live up to it. We haven't to this point, but this isn't the same team as last year. So in a lot of ways, but it could be in a lot of ways too. So, but as far as the team before the game, you know, I used to say, hey, we want to be enthusiastic and all, but we don't want to go nuts and beat each other up in pregame either. So it had to be something for him to say that. So I don't know what it was.
All right.
He is pretty – He's never going to do, if he's on with Chuck Dowell or ESPN, hey, guess what, everybody? We're going to whip their ass today. We're going to blow their doors off.
Sure.
You know, we're going to destroy this team by 30. He's always like, he's, I don't say pessimistic, but he's a situation where it's like, you know, I got to be sure our guys are up. You know, he probably saw some stuff in the warm-ups that he didn't like, or the guys were a little too lackadaisical. David Marshall told us that they were overconfident.
Yeah.
And he said, look, we came out flat, you know.
Well, I can see why they would be.
Us, you know. And I'm like, what do you mean overconfident? He says, well, exactly that. You know, we're a little overconfident. You know, they were expecting.
Well, you're a 22-point favorite against a team you've been tomahawking the last couple of years.
Yeah, and at home. You know, it's not like you're on the road. So,
we talked about it all week on our show. Those are the games you got to take care of business. I mean, South Carolina was a wounded team psychologically. The quarterback's out for the year. The other quarterback's hurt. There's a question mark about a lot of guys on their team. Everybody's talking about as a coach on the hot seat and all that. I mean, this was the game of his life, and they had 2 weeks to get ready for it, and they did a good job getting their team ready, and we gave it to them on top of that.
Well, you have to give it to them. I mean, Agent Muschamp has done a great job at Florida, now with South Carolina. You got to give him something to stay over there. Right?
Yeah, right. I guess so. All right. This one, Coach, you can skip this one if you want. I do want to ask Roddy this one. Feel free to chime in if you'd like. But he says, HBTMFD over on the board says.
Took me a second to work out the
what is that?
He says, with Kirby being the defensive mind that he is, how come he can't see how unbelievably easy it would be for him to game plan against this offense?
I don't think that it would be. Okay, let's look at a lot of people saying, well, they're predictable. I want anybody to come on our live show, and you tell me what Georgia's going to do play by play. Everyone says, oh, it's predictable. Bull crap. It is not predictable because you can do, well, this is going to be a pass, this is going to be a run. Congratulations. You got 50-50 chance of getting that right. Tell me where that pass is going or who's going to run the ball. You do that, and I'll say that this is a predictable offense.
Okay, you look at our self-scout. We've got a lot of different things we do. So, I mean, we'd be hard to prepare for regardless, but I can see where there's certain things that people think that we do have tendencies.
You
a good team's got tendencies.
Yeah. And so they say, well, you run the ball mostly on second down. That's because you were throwing it on first down. You weren't completing those passes. Now you're looking at second and 10. Do you really want to throw it on second and 10, or do you want to pick up 5-7 yards and, you know, have a much better third down possibility? So to me, it's like he's looking at it. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, I don't want to say it on air. It's a great handle there, and I appreciate being a member of sports. But
Dave,
I just don't think that it's as predictable because, let's say you know, they run in motion. You always got to prepare for that jet sweep that could be coming across, you know, when Tyler Simmons or somebody goes in motion. You got Demetrius Robertson you got to take care of. You got to watch out for Robertson on the edge. And, again, Kirby said, look, you know, you're talking about us running the ball. You have one of the best offensive linemen or offensive lines in college football and a plethora of backs. They said, why are we running it? Because that's our strength. That's what you're built to do. In a lot of these other games, you know, did they ever run three in a row? Run, and then kick the ball and punt?
I don't think so.
How many punts were there?
Two.
So the offense was moving the ball to the tune of 500 yards.
Well, Kirby mentioned
4 turnovers, though. Anything we talk about, the turnovers just take everything away. We've won 15 straight Eastern games. I just think any way you look at it, the play calling, there's good and bad, but realistically, you got no chance with four turnovers against a solid team.
That's my point. I'm not trying to, you know, get on a soapbox here, but to me, the term predictable, you have to qualify that. If you're suggesting pass versus run, okay, congratulations. Then every team's predictable. Yeah, I can tell you what the New England Patriots are going to do on a daily basis.
They're either going to pass or run.
Yeah, and I got a 50-50% chance of getting it right. Hey, guess what? It's third and nine. I think I know what's going to happen. It's first and goal from the two. I can kind of tell you what's going to happen. You know, there's down and distance and situational football that will predict what you're going to do, but you just have to run the play and call the right one. So the idea that, well, Kirby can look at his offense and figure out how easy that is to defend.
We need this guy. What's his name?
HBTMFD.
The only thing I know is when I go out to practice, which is very limited now, our offense moves the ball on the defense. They move it when they go against each other.
Well, they moved it on everybody else, and they moved it on South Carolina but then they turned it over four more times.
Capitalizing. You know, we play around their quarterback. He's good at calling the plays at the line. He's good at doing so many things. And he had some bad throws the other day. He had some really bad throws that didn't get hurt us from the standpoint of turnovers, but could have been big plays over the middle when we threw the ball behind the guy a little bit.
Yeah, Pickens saved Jake Fromm on one of those.
Definitely.
You know? And we've seen that in the past. You know, Javon Wims has done that. Lawrence Cager's done that. Jeremiah Holloman's done that. Sometimes your ball isn't right where you want it to, and you have to have a wide receiver make a great play. There are a couple thrown behind him. My point is you can't always predict where the ball is going to go. If so, you would not be having the success that you are. It's not always –
quarterbacks have so many chances to get exposed out there compared to any other position. Just like a routine play, you would think a quarterback center exchange. And I talked about it on our walk, our watch.
Yeah, watch long.
So
that was a good point.
What happened is Trey was going out to the right, and if the center steps to the right, you got to ride him to the right. We don't get under center a lot, and we don't really reach the center that much. It's more head up. Well, that separation of him stepping to the right and him backing up, that's how you got the fumble. That's a routine fundamental play, but that's another play where the other team benefited because we didn't do what we're supposed to.
Yeah. So you have good job by ESPN on giving us a perfect view of that replay. You were at the stadium. You didn't see it, but they had the center exchange down, and you see – Trey Hill snap the ball and take off to his right, and you see Jake Fromm pulling back to turn, and that ball just sitting there in the air like, is anybody going to claim this thing? And it hits the ground, and of course they jumped on it.
You always, in my tips and reminders for 40 years, the quarterback, just one of the first thing, when a center's blocking back or reaching, ride him out. I mean, that's right there in there every time, and I'm sure it is with Coach Coley. And in this case, he didn't ride him.
Yeah, and so you had a good drive stop there. You had a pick six on that shouldn't have been. You know, you had another interception on the bad route. Again, if that ball's thrown to the other side or Landers, you know, goes the other way, all of a sudden that's a completion. Maybe it's for a first down, and we don't have this. We're not having this conversation.
It doesn't matter whose fault it is. It happened, though.
No, but the point is when you have four turnovers and two missed field goals, that is a minimum. Say you get a field goal on those four drives and you hit the other two. Now, all of a sudden, you're looking at, you know, 12, 16 points on the board, possible 35 points, you know, if some of those turn into touchdowns. You left so much on the field. You beat yourselves. And, you know, South Carolina did a good job.
One more point. Yeah. Kicking game, we're getting nothing on a return game at all, you know. So we're going 80, 90 yards every time, right?
Yeah.
Field position-wise. That guy did a good job.
Yeah, he did. And I asked Kirby about this yesterday because – we were told that, you know, maybe they're handcuffing Dominic Blaylock a little bit, saying, look, you have to do a fair catch on this no matter what. And there were a couple that looked like he could return.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I asked Kirby about it. I'm like, look, are you predetermining whether or not he can return this ball or not? Kirby said, that's a good question, which I appreciate him.
I bet you did. Thank you
very much. Like, but he said, because he saw a chance to explain what could be a misconception out there, he said, look, this is a team considering where they were. We thought there was a good chance they would fake a punt, you know, especially when they're punting from their 50. You know, he's like, and That would be – they've done it before. So you keep everybody up there in the line.
Fake the field goal against Alabama.
He said, so we think – we're worried about – they're going to fake a punt. So we're in fake safe, I think he called it. And that means everybody's up there in case they fake it. No one's – they're not blocking. They're not staying back there to set up some protection for Dominic Blaylock, which means he's going to have one, two, three guys bearing down on him with zero blocking. And – you don't. Last thing you need is one more wide receiver going out with Cager being down, and you know. So, Kyrus Jackson's not back yet completely. So it's like, look, you know. To your point, we're going to worry about the fake, catch it, you know, or you know, let it go over your head wherever your heels are, and again, Georgia's got to drive the ball 90 yards against a pretty good defense.
Yeah, so that's a good answer there. But last year we were averaging like 14 yards a punt return.
Yeah, miss Miko Harmon. Real quick before we hit another question, I want to give a big shout-out to our friends at Aaron Overhead Doors. I've had people reach out to me and go, hey, I'm in X City. You know, do they reach out? Will they come down here and do my thing? Or will they be able to fix my garage door where I'm at? The easiest thing to do, folks, if you're not sure, just go to AaronOverheadDoors.com, A-A-R-O-N, OverheadDoors.com. And click on service area. I can tell you they cover Alpharetta, Buford, Cumming, Tecula, Duluth, Dunwoody, Gainesville, Johns Creek, North Atlanta, Sandy Springs, Suwanee, a ton of places. And, you know, knowing Ryan Lucia and the folks over there, if you're a two-hour drive away, they'll probably still show up. 3 hours. I mean, these guys will want to take care of you. It is a customer service business that just happens to fix garage doors. That's the way you think of it. It's the, Chick-fil-A of garage door. You know, we're about customer service. They just happen to, instead of selling chicken, they sell.
Just jerked my head off.
I'm sorry.
About for a year.
You killed the coach. So big shout out to our friends at Aaron Overhead Doors for sponsoring
the show. I got irritated.
Hey, look who's here.
We got a question here from Shownuff 253. He said, this is a two-parter for Coach.
Two-parter.
He says, is the pass offense scheme designed so Jake is primarily looking for safer sideline and hitch curl routes versus more high-risk, high-reward routes over the middle? That's
good,
part one.
Good question.
You got different kinds of routes that you call the question is such that we answered that earlier about it. It's harder to throw over the middle as far as the chance of a defense stopping it. But most of the time I like when you throw in the middle of the fake inside to get the backers moving and then come over behind them. But we don't have any predetermined, say, go away from the middle or go to the boundary. But, you know, a lot of times you base it on the coverage look and based on – what we'd seen in the scouting report, they were vulnerable to the outside, but they took that away a little bit, and we thought we could hit some deep ones on them early, and we didn't do it. So we got away from that and started throwing some over the middle, and it worked pretty good. But we got to find some way. If you just told me after six games that Charlie Warner would only have four catches, I would have said based on he's the second leading guy coming back for our team, you would thought that he would had been targeted a lot more. And I think what Wolf's had is nine.
Yeah, I believe so.
So, you know, inside receivers got to step it up a little bit. But
they had seven. Here's the thing.
The other thing, Swift, 23 carries for 113 yards. You know, his yards per carry down in that game.
True.
When you have a situation where you target the tight end seven times and get zero receptions.
That's not going to get you many more balls thrown your way.
Yeah,
part two of this question I thought was interesting as well. Shownuff 253. He says, is the reason for not targeting the middle in the passing game to clear out defenders for up the middle runs?
Well, you like to keep those guys out of the box. You know what I mean? That's a good analogy there. If you've got an extra safety in the box, then the middle should be open a little bit, you know what I mean? But if they're backed up, you ought to be able to throw in front of them if they're playing cover two. So a lot of it depends on where the safeties are. But I really believe that I thought for the season that we were going to have an inordinate amount of play-action passes go big for us this year. They have against the lesser teams. They haven't against the two teams that, you know, played us close, South Carolina and Notre Dame. So we got to make the play action go, though. You got to make them play the run. And they were able to play the run without their safeties in the game. I don't know how many tackles their safeties made, but I don't think they made a lot, did they? Could you check on that, Dave?
I don't.
Yeah, make sure you don't Well, even if they did, say they didn't.
I was going to say something about that. I don't want to bust on a coach too easily there.
But. All right. I'm going to take this question because it's for me. O-Town CVR 82 says, Jake, do you see our offensive scheme changing in the future based off of the type of personnel being recruited at the skill positions? Seems like Alabama and LSU have both changed their offensive philosophies and have recruited guys to match it. I've noticed guys like Marcus Roseme, Cordy Wren, possibly Arian Smith are guys with speed that we are targeting, as well as Theo Johnson and Darnell Washington as matchup nightmares in the passing game. Your thoughts? I do think that there's a bit of a shift going, but I don't know that it's necessarily like you're not rewriting anything with that. I mentioned before, Marcus Roseme to me reminds me of Riley Ridley. I think that he's a very similar player to him. Cordy Wren is a bit more of that Mecole Hardman type.
Yeah.
Arian Smith is, you know, he's 6 foot tall, one of the fastest kids in America, certainly. So, you know, that kind of
along with Wren.
That, well, yeah, and that, but that sounds a little bit to me like Demetrius Robertson coming out of high school. You know, he was a Blazer too.
Well, let's look at what they've done with some of, and I don't want to throw you off, but
no, yeah,
you take the same body guys and you put bring in the same body type but faster. Kirby Smart's done that with his secondary, brought in some guys. Didn't really change up the body type a whole bunch, but brought in some of the fastest secondary guys. I mean, you look at that cornerbacks, and, you know, those guys can fly. So you have a situation where it's like, hey, we might not be changing the plays. We might not be changing the routes, but we're going to run them a little bit faster, and all of a sudden, maybe you do get that separation.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, and here's the other thing. Every one of the receivers we lost, counting Holloman, counting Godwin, counting Ridley, and counting Hardman, would be the feature guy this year.
Sure.
They would be our number one receiver. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I would have to agree. Slim Mosley wants to know, just out of nowhere, he says, do y'all live in Athens? Yes, we do. All three of us.
What's he doing, a survey here?
I don't know. He's with the census.
He's like, well, now he does. Okay, you live in Athens, yeah. But you're for an hour, you're at Champions on Tuesday.
Right. Well,
I don't have anything in my house to
Champions
steal.
Champions on Tuesday, Academy on Wednesday.
Well, he's like, look, I don't have anything worth stealing.
You're
going
to be
house.
Sadly disappointed if question. You go to my place, buddy.
Good question, though.
All right, let's see.
It's a census report there.
Hey, he's probably out of work. I mean, a census worker is just doing working from home.
All right, I'm going to wrap up on this one because I think that this is not. This
are
is not
we a, close to being
is,
over?
This is not a question. This is just a statement.
A wrap up.
Forestry Jason says, Coach, I think most of us just need some hope. Many of our fans are ready to jump off a bridge. Give some hope to these people out
there. Yeah, I mean, realistically, I feel the same way as far as, you know, just inexplicable loss that's happened to a lot of us over the years. But I feel like that certainly we were exposed in some areas that maybe some other people with similar kind of ability can maybe do if we don't, you know, do better. But if you look at what they did trying to defend us without the four turnovers, they would have probably given up, as you mentioned, more points. So we got to, first of all, avoid losing ourselves, avoid the penalties, avoid the turnovers. And, you know, that's easier said than done. But I still feel like this team has a very high ceiling. It's got very I feel like our defense is going to get better with Campbell back. And hopefully Webb back in our nickel package, and maybe start creating a little bit easier field position for the offense to get some easy scores, you know, where you don't have to go 80 yards and stop yourself. But there's hope for me. I mean, like I said, you know, like the optimist and the pessimist with the kid with the room full of horse manure in there, he's digging. He said, I know there's a pony in here somewhere. we got optimism to me. I think we can make it. But realistically, we've got to understand that until we start making more explosive plays on offense, and you just can't dial them up and say, hey, this is going to be explosive, or get good kick returns or whatever it might be, we're going to have some games where we don't just beat everybody's brains out.
What are you looking for to change on Saturday? What's going to help you know that Georgia has taken a step forward from where they were last Saturday?
win the turnover battle.
That would be a good start, I would say.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, Kirby Smart, he talks about it all the time, you know, and I don't want to call that a conservative football mentality, but it's the most important thing. I don't care what you say about, you know, establish a run, win the line of scrimmage. If you turn the bloody ball over, none of that matters.
Sure.
You know? It's just when you go 4 turnovers to nothing, you've beat yourself. And if you want to go back through my Twitter feed, and you can go back years, hell, when I first started doing it, I've always said the 3 ingredients for a upset are turnovers, special teams,
paprika,
and penalties. You know, bake it 350 for
Bear Ronnie. Bear.
I'm just saying, when you turn the ball over 4 times like Georgia did, that's a bad day. When you are doing 0 return yards in the punt game and you miss 2 field goals, that's a bad day. When you get penalties to convert a 3rd and 20 into a first down, and penalty so you can't get your last playoff like you want to, you know. Georgia, I mean, they didn't have 13, 14 penalties, but the penalties they had were at the absolute worst possible time. I mean, right. Hell, give me a procedure penalty, you know, when it's 1st and 10, sure, on the opponent's 35, not when there's 3 seconds left on the bloody clock. Yeah.
And particularly,
you beat yourself that Saturday.
And everything's magnified because all of them happened in one game, but usually those are things that happen to a poor team.
Yeah.
We're not a poor team, but it was just like a combination of everything. And in spite of that, we still had a chance as a number 3 ranked team in the country with the football on the 25-yard line. All we got to do is score a touchdown, and we win the game. I say, hey, we're going to, on a watch long, we're going to win 6-3 here. They kicked the first field goal. We were on offense. We got a chance. All we got to do is go in there and score, and we can't score.
Yeah, and
we missed a field goal. But, I mean, you got to think that a team like us, in spite of all the luck that they had or bad luck we had, had a chance to do it. And when you got to get called on to get it in there, you got to do that at the last second.
I do want to see we will have a watch-along party this Saturday at 6. Maybe we can get our friends at Your Pie to kick us over some pizzas. Now, I will say Champions came through last week. They brought us – Jake, you'd have loved it. It was this giant platter of food.
Why are you telling
fried
me this?
Fried catfish.
Chicken
fingers, hush puppies, the sausages. It was fantastic. Now let's see if we can call our friends over Europe. Hey, bring us some of those pizzas and bring us that pasta they do, that new pasta. I really want to try it. Well, this time we'll probably have forks, so we don't have to just pick at it. But
tell everybody how they can listen to it and watch it.
Just go to our YouTube channel, UGA Sports. Go to YouTube, click in UGASports.com. Right around 5:50, it will be there. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook. We'll put up the links to it, and you can watch the show with us. I noticed this time we were about 9-10 seconds behind. If you're watching it on the TV, you got a DVR, just hit pause, count to 9, hit start, and we'll be synced up. It's easy breezy, and you'll get better. Who's the announcers for this?
Dan Orlovsky and Bob Shishin.
For this.
Last week. No, I'm talking about this week.
This coming week.
Mickey Mouse and Donald.
I don't care who it is. They won't know as much as Coach
Are
Donald.
We on ESPN?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
6 o'clock, but appreciate everybody. We had some really good questions during the game. And
We'll be able to watch that. So you'll be able to watch it with us. Coach Dunn will answer your questions throughout the game. He will give you some insight that I guarantee you won't get anywhere else. And maybe we'll have some of the fantastic Europie pizza there. It'll be custom made. You know, they have salads.
If we lose Saturday, then we're going to probably have to deep six this thing.
if you don't want to come to our watch party, you're not going to be in the stadium on Saturday, swing by our friends over at Academia Brewing Company. They have the huge watch parties there. They have the big giant projector.
Know what we ought to ask them to do over there? With all the channels they got, they should put our deal up on the YouTube on one of the stations.
Yeah, well,
that's a great idea.
It's called Chromecast. Just send it right up there.
I like it.
Tell our man over at Academia he'd do that.
Absolutely. Hey, Matt.
Oh, we're at Champions.
Matt, I know you're watching or listening. Hit it up.
Isn't that a good idea?
Yeah, absolutely. See, he's a marketing genius. So,
just give them a chance because you said if you're not going to listen to it, so you really.
No, I'm just saying if you're not in the stadium.
What about the people after it's over with? Can they?
You
come
can always
back
go
and
back and watch it.
Sure.
So that's what I'm saying. If you have the South Carolina game on your DVR, you can go in right now. Watch where we actually have it bookmarked where kickoff is. You can hit play on your DVR. Hit play on YouTube. and we're synced up through the whole game. And you can
don't listen to the pregame talk because I sound like an idiot there. Because I am an idiot, but talking about how we're going to carve up their secondary.
Oh no, there were a lot. There were a lot of old takes exposed. We saw a couple media outlets talking about how Georgia's going to win by 35 points and just boat
race
these guys.
I didn't say that. I just thought we were going to carve them up.
I know there were some people that were expecting a bloodbath, and it just happened to go the opposite way. Anyway. That's all the time we have for this week's show. I want to say a big shout-out to Athens Ford, Aaron Overhead Doors, Your Pie, Academia Brewing Company, of course, Cable East. And thanks to Champions for the food last week and letting us come in here and take over their restaurant once a week. We will be back next Tuesday to talk about the Georgia-Kentucky game.
365 game day, too. Oh, yeah.
Hold on. Wait. We got one thing to do before we do.
What's that?
What do you think's going to happen in the game? We haven't talked at all about
Kentucky. I'm still talking about South Carolina.
I think we got to go away from the make-your-mouth-water player because it kind of jinxed them there. But I think the main thing for us is reestablish ourselves as far as confidence in each other and look like the team and play like the team we're capable of. Hey, you just don't love your fans out there. You just love your kids when they do something right. When they have some adversity, you got to give them a little more love. And let's get behind this team and pull them through Saturday.
Keep an eye on Monty Rice.
There you go.
Oh, look at him. He just – you jumping on it after I talked
to him. No, I'm just saying that –
our linebackers as a whole played really good. I saw those grades that you posted today, Trent Smallwood had on. And I wish they'd put on there how many plays they play, too.
We do that. We have the snap count. That'll be up this afternoon.
Yeah.
Oh, you just got to tease me. I got to look at both of them.
Yes, you do. So the snap count, when I get back to the office, I will post it. That'll be up. So you have the grades and the snap count. They'll both be ready. So you can see exactly how many snaps they played and what percentage. I always think that's interesting. If you see, oh, you played 17. Well, how many
available snaps.
And I tell you, I learn more from the snap count, especially, you know, what kind of packages Georgia's putting in than I do anything else. So it's a fantastic piece. The reason I'm saying that, I'm not trying to get to the mouth-watering guy. I'm just thinking with the way this quarterback is set up and the stuff he's going to do, I could definitely see Monty Rice being the key to how well or poorly Georgia defends this Kentucky team.
Yeah.
I guarantee agree. If they're not threatening to throw the ball against us, I don't think they're going to make many yards myself.
I just see Monty saying, all right, where are you at?
Sure.
I'm going
say,
with you.
Where are you at, man? It sounds bad English.
I apologize. So much for the local jargon. Hey, where are you at? All right. We are here at Champions, and we will be back next week at noon on Tuesday. So be sure to tune in. We'll talk to you later.